Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 204. If you are listening on 1120, check out 98.7 FM. If you're anywhere between the rivers and anywhere along the 40 and 44 corridor, and even beyond, I hear people say, like, you say that, Dave, but I can hear you as far as, you know, Litchfield or whatever they say. Check that out. The best you can do is the Odyssey app. That's why I listen to Total Information AM when I'm driving in, or Chris and Amy, depending on what time I leave my house. And you can also leave us voice memos by going to the KMOX page. Right next to Listen Live, there is a microphone icon. Simply click on that, start talking. You have 60 seconds to leave us whatever message you want, just like the listener left a message about what it's like to argue with Wheeler. We're taking them on anything. We love the Ask DGS segment. That's you can ask us anything. But today we're doing a special one, that what's wrong with the Cardinals and what would you do to fix it if you had the power to do that? We'd love to get some of those. And we have Ricky Horton coming up at 2:30. We get a few of those in. We'll play a couple of them for Rick. Rach has a new segment called Razor's Edge. Rach, what do you got?
I want to talk about Jordan Chiles, because we have spent a lot of time on this show and on the internet and all over the place. People are talking about Raygun, the breaker from Australia who is so bad at breakdancing that she kind of broke the internet. So a lot of attention has been paid to that story. But have you guys heard about what's going on with Jordan Chiles? So she did her floor routine during the Olympics, got a certain score, placed her in fourth place at the time. But her coach went and did an inquiry to review her score, and it placed her at third, and she received a bronze medal. Well, the CAS, the Court of Arbitration for Sports, has ruled that her coach was 4 seconds late to request an inquiry, and they are stripping her of her bronze medal, even though Team USA says they have video evidence of this inquiry being put in at like 53 seconds, because you only have a minute to do it, and they did it at like 53 seconds. Well, the CAS is just saying, like, oh, tough, but we're not going to do this for you. So Romania is getting the third place bronze medal instead. Now, the thing that I find to be very interesting is Romania is taking kind of like a Solomon approach to the issue and saying, like, why don't we share the medal, or why can't we do two medals? They can share third place. Mm-hmm. And the CAS does not seem interested in that.
I wonder what's going on.
I don't know. Jordan Chiles just posted about this on Instagram and said, I have no words. This decision feels unjust and comes as a significant blow, not just to me, but to everyone who has championed my journey. To add to the heartbreak, the unprompted, racially driven attacks on social media are wrong and extremely hurtful.
Poor thing.
I know. So she's going through the pain of losing this huge accomplishment. I was so happy for her whenever she got because I was just taken with her by watching. I'm like, she just seems like such a great girl.
And it was that moment, the first time three black women were on the podium.
Yes. And she's just, if it's not bad enough that she's having her award taken away, and such a prestigious one as well, like, now it's like people are being racist towards her on social media. It's absolutely awful. Just a terrible situation.
You see the further kerfuffle that the head of that represented Romania for several years?
I did see that. So it's looking a little suspect. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, if there's anything about the Olympics that you can carry over the decades, is that it's the shadiest organization on the planet. Everything about the, I mean, you guys, this is ridiculous, because there's clear video evidence that shows that the coach approached and made the challenge 47 seconds after, and the limit is 1 minute. So there's clear video evidence of this. But this kind of thing happens in all Olympics. It just doesn't always affect an American athlete. It doesn't always affect, you know, an individual. It might be a team. You can go back to 1972, the gold medal basketball game between the U.S. Mm-hmm. and Russia. The U.S. was completely robbed. Completely robbed. I mean, they changed the clock. They didn't start the clock. They set the clock back. All of it setting it up for Russia to have their chance to pull off the upset. And I think there's a documentary about it.
There is.
Because Doug Collins, the former Bulls mm-hmm. coach and NBA coach and analyst, was a player on that team. And it's just, like, this is the Olympics. The Olympics is this. Some of it is that it's such a huge, unwieldy thing that it's impossible to have good standards carry all the way down to every venue and every judge and everything else. But it's also because there's just too much general corruption to bother even trying to fix problems, as opposed to just doing whatever, sticking with whatever was decided in that moment, right? So these judges decided this in the moment. They didn't want to change it. They don't like being challenged, and this was their way of saying, nope, you don't get to challenge.
It seems so. I mean, I was watching the high jump competition, and the guys tied, and they said, you can either share the medal or you can keep going until someone wins. They decided to keep going until someone wins.
Right, right.
The guy from the U.S. lost. That's their choice.
Yeah.
In another event, they chose to share the medal, which I think is great. If ever there's a time when you share the medal, this seems like the one that you do it.
Yeah, or how about we just have better standards in place? And we follow them. Like, let's account for this, right? Where's the official video with a timer on it at every venue that shows exactly what's happening and who's running that? Like, I get it. It's very detailed. There's a lot. I mean, they have a lot of events and a lot of venues to run, but you got a lot of people running them.
Mm-hmm.
There is the bandwidth to do these things correctly, but the Olympics, the overarching group, right? The IOC. All they end up caring about is how they fatten their wallets through the process of selecting cities. They get, I don't know if bribes is fair to say because that's alleging a crime, but we've had those allegations be proven before. But there are all kinds of favors and things like that and perks that they get. I don't think that anybody running the Olympics cares to get these things right. And it damages these athletes who spend their entire lives to get to this point. And this is what happens.
You're so right, Wheels. We need an official video with a timer on it because this is just getting very messy. Now the committee is saying like, well, they sent it to the wrong email address for the appeal. It's like, guys, are you serious? So that means that she didn't get a certain score at this point because the email was wrong. I mean, it's just, it's very disappointing to see. This is probably going to be dragged out for months and months, maybe years, because I'm sure they're going to keep appealing this, but just very sad to see. Another thing I wanted to talk about is Kamala Harris is pledging to take care of some of these steep grocery prices that we're seeing all over the place. She plans to propose the first ever federal ban on corporate price gouging in the food and grocery industries. Her campaign announced this late last night, saying there's a big difference between fair pricing in competitive markets and excessive prices unrelated to the cost of doing business. Americans can see that difference in their grocery bills. So this is all going to be part of a bigger economic policy platform that Kamala is going to unveil tomorrow night in North Carolina at a rally. But I'm a little interested about this. Like, look, I want someone advocating for us and saying like, yeah, you can't price gouge. But at a certain point, is it up to the government to step in and tell private businesses where they can set their prices?
I mean, it's an age old question that how much power do you give to the government? Are you libertarian about it? Are you conservative? Are you liberal about it? But we have safety guards on lots of things. And for example, back when it was eggs. And I was dumb enough to think like, oh, there's an egg shortage. That's why it costs $10.99 for a dozen eggs instead of $2.99. Then you found out, no, they just had the opportunity and they did it. There, I think that there you should be able to come in just like you can with unlawful trade practices and sue them and win and get some compensation.
Yeah,
but I agree with you. I don't want the nanny state. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in between.
Yeah, this is the hard part to me because, like, I believe that it's illegal. Like, let's say this came up in South Florida when I lived down there because of hurricanes. I do believe it's illegal after a natural disaster to be like, yep, generators are now $10,000. It was $1,000 before, but now it's $10,000. I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Yeah.
So we have some versions of that, but like, we have to set a standard, and it has to be blatantly obvious, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just say you're not allowed to chase more profit because, of course, you can.
Because that's competition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because
if
you're charging $10.99 a pound for your hamburger at Schnucks and Deerberg says we'll do it for $7.99, that's the way it works.
Right. And I think where the egg people, your favorite, the egg board, where they got
the
in trouble,
council.
The egg council, and then the chicken people got in trouble is they started to coordinate it as an industry. Right. They were colluding to raise those prices. That can't happen.
Yeah.
We already have those protections in place. But if three different grocery stores say, like, for example, Dave, you said, what if one says, well, man, we're going for $10.99 a pound on this because we think we can get it, and they start getting it, and others go, well, damn, they're getting that, so now we're going to do that too because we can make that money. Like, that's a different thing than colluding.
Speaking of stupid decisions, I saw the two of you had this on your show sheet today. How dumb forget right or wrong, how myopic and stupid is it for Disney to be denying these people's claims, forcing them to go to arbitration because this woman literally died? Supposedly, the allegation is that she had a terrible food allergy. Andrew, I know this is close to home for you because your wife has a terrible food allergy, and she died. And they said, well, you have to go to arbitration. You can't sue us because you did a one-month trial of Disney Plus, and in that long... what's it called?
What are they
called?
Terms and conditions
that no one ever reads ever. You just sign it. You just click on it. They're not. I just think it is so ridiculously dumb that they're doing this, because whatever they say, let's say they would have paid this person $1 million. How much ill will are you creating with every Disney person out there?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really bad. And I mean, it's even... The more you think about it, the worse it gets. And I don't know if that will necessarily hold up in court, because I feel like something like this happened before. It was something that I think maybe Apple had buried deep within the quote-unquote terms and conditions. And Disney just putting a blanket thing in the Disney Plus thing that says, you can never sue us for any reason.
enjoy the Lion subscribe. King.
Yeah, right. If you subscribe to Disney Plus... I don't know how well that'll hold up, because I believe there was something like that with Apple where it was like, if the iPhone explodes and melts your face off, hey, not our problem, because you bought an iPhone one time when you were, 22.
221 DGS on KMOX. KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. You would like to... always have that voice be positive, and maybe what I'm about to say is positive, even though it's going to sound negative at first. Being downtown every single day, working downtown every single day, it is dystopian. It is beyond bad, and we are at Tucker and Olive, and here's the problem. I have a big heart for homeless people. I have a big heart for people who have addiction problems, and there are a ton of homeless people down here. There are a ton of people with addiction problems. Rach and I tried to go for a little walk today, as we do pretty much every day before the show, and we had multiple people literally chasing us down, asking us for money, and here's the problem. We are outnumbered by homeless people. We are outnumbered. Business people who are down here for jobs, doing business, conducting commerce, are literally, I'm not trying to be a shock jock, there are more homeless people and people with addictions asking you for money than there are business people. If we walk down to Chili Max at the corner of 4th and Pine, we will see two. Is that an exaggeration? Maybe two other business people, but you'll see a dozen people who are down here who are homeless or are asking you for money or people with addictions. And when I say people with addictions, I'm talking about people lying on sidewalks, all whacked out on drugs. The answer to me is, of course, you need more police. More police, I think, are going to help crime. You need programs for people who have addictions. You need programs for people who are homeless. There are those programs. People can avail themselves. People can get food. You can go to St. Patrick's Center. You can get 3 square meals a day. You can get a bed to sleep on. For whatever reason, some people choose not to do that. You need business downtown. When I was down here, and I know I sound a million years old, but when I was down here in the 90s, I was just talking about this with my boss, Steve Moore, today, you had to wait to get into almost every restaurant. There were 100 restaurants downtown alone. I went to the QT at Jefferson yesterday. I don't think I'll ever go back there again. It was an S show. Just the people screaming and yelling outside on the parking lot, screaming and yelling inside. I did not feel safe. It's not a proper place to conduct business. You need people downtown who are working, who are going to lunch, who are going to happy hour. We are sitting on $1 billion. It's time that we stop dinking around and doing a little bit here and a little bit there. And we're going to have an after school program this time. And we're going to do this here. You need to fix the roads. You need to do some real tax breaks. You need to beautify. You need to police. You need to make it so that people want to be downtown. Otherwise, it's dead. It is almost dead now. It's not going to come back organically. You're going to have to make some big moves. It's going to cost us a lot of money. And thankfully, we're sitting on a lot of money. Thoughts?
So there are a lot. I mean, one is if we're not talking just about taking care of the human beings. We are. Like, that's important. But that's not necessarily something that we can all just fix, right? Mental health issues are mental health issues. They're
and
going to exist.
And if you did that, if you helped every single person down here that needs help, you are not going to bring business in just based on that.
Not just by that, but it would help.
It would help.
It would help. And I think that is a separate and honorable goal that exists alongside what I'm going to talk about, which is what you're getting to, which is how do you get downtown going again? Why are all the addicts down here? Why are they? I know it's not hard because the dealers are there.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that. That's a fact. The people that are homeless that are right here in these blocks, they're not going 2 miles down the road to get their fix and then coming back. They are where the dealers are, or the dealers are coming to them. So we know that there are people out there right now, today, at this moment, dealing drugs to people. Right across the street from City Hall. Well, now they're moved, right? Because they put up temporary fences. So it's not in the Fireman's Park anymore. It's actually like two parks further down than it used to be. But that's all they're doing is shuttling the problem around. Well, that's not going to fix the problem. But that's the one thing that you as a city can start to take action against. Would be the criminals that are selling drugs, the criminals that are stealing cars, the criminals that are doing whatever bad things people are doing. That's the only part that to me, as a municipality, you can really make a concerted, targeted effort on and have a sure solution, right? You can't have a sure solution for mental health. We know it doesn't work that way, but we should try. You know, as human beings, we should try. But we almost have to separate the two ideas at this moment. Why are all the homeless people that are dealing with drugs, and what would you guys say, based on observation of the people that we see out here, I would say 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5
big majority
are on drugs, on something, booze, whatever. Well, if we're not going to take care of how they're getting that down here, how do you even take care of anything else? I mean, if there are people that are able to just deal drugs across the street from City Hall, what are you doing? How do you get businesses down when you're not? Again, you can't address everything at once. We can't say there's a magical solution. But if we're talking about the steps that are required to get businesses to come back downtown, to get people to come back to downtown, safety is going to be right there at the top. Safety and then attractiveness, you know, convenience, obviously not ruining your car on pothole-filled streets. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to think about what that's going to do to the car over 10 years. But man, you know, you got to get the people selling out.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. We are taking your voice memos. You can go to the Odyssey app, which hopefully you've already done. You can like the KMOX page. And when you do that and you go to your KMOX page, as I do every morning, and listen to Total Information AM on my drive in, and you will see the Listen Live button. And then right next to it, you'll see a microphone icon. You press on that icon and you have 60 seconds to leave us a message. It can be anything. It can be timely, what we're talking about now. Earlier, Wheeler was being Wheeler and someone chimed in on him being Wheeler. And we're asking you today, how bad is it with the Cardinals? What do you think is wrong? And what would you do to fix it? So we're going to be playing those throughout the show. You can do that. It's our pleasure to talk to Ricky Horton, as we do twice a week. Hello, Rick.
Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, let me put my early vote in to not get rid of the broadcasters. Let's not blame
them. Well, Rick, you guys are not losing games.
So noted.
But you know, one of the things you learn early on in this, you don't win them either. So, I mean, the players, and you know, actually coaches and managers and general managers learn that too. At some point, you know, it really is, it's a player's game, and they either do or they don't, as Tony La Russa used to say.
Rick, my Dave question for you today is, we're 120, 121 games in. It's the heat of August, the dog days of summer. If you could, I'd like you to talk about three things. One, the effect it has on pitchers, which you know all about. The effect it has on position players, which you know something about. You know, you were batting back during your career. And then, and this is not a joke, I don't mean this ironically, the effect it has on broadcasters. You guys are traveling You guys have been doing it now for months, and you're in hotels, and you're at different stadiums, and the team's doing well, the team's doing poorly. So let's start out with the effect it has on pitchers, please.
Okay, so pitchers have it a little better, and actually we used to in the day, too, because we were actually on the dirt, not on the AstroTurf. Now, we don't have to deal with that anymore, but the fact is pitchers get winded earlier, no question about that. You kind of feel your strength being zapped a little bit. Now, honestly, it's not a great excuse considering the last road trip because the weather was awesome in Kansas City and in Cincinnati. It actually felt like September. So September tends to rejuvenate pitchers because of the things you're talking about. But I would say you just kind of feel a little lethargic, and you have to kind of mentally fight through that. And the best way to do it is to say, okay, the other guy's kind of tired too, so let me just use it to my advantage.
What does it do to your arm in particular, Rick? I know I've heard you say dead arm before. Like, talk to us. What does that feel like?
So dead arm is kind of just when your arm is just worn out. I mean, you've thrown so much. Now, you actually get that in spring training. It's not unusual to get it towards the end of spring training because you've kind of exercised your arm in a way that you cannot duplicate during the off season. So it just kind of gets to a point where you realize, okay, like lifting, like, okay, I'm done lifting. I got to take a couple of days off. That's what that's like to me. I think it's more of a fatigue thing than a dead arm from a pitcher's point of view. I think you're just kind of, you're just kind of worn down. I mean, it's a better way to say it. Like you just ran a half marathon, not that you've just lifted weights too much. So I think it's a different kind of issue that pitchers deal with when you're talking about the dog days of August.
And for position players, and Wheels, you can jump in on this as well, playing collegiate ball. I'm guessing, like, there's not a player out there that doesn't have some sort of an ailment, whether it's blisters or it's a sore
right.
back or it's a sore elbow or something.
You know, I'm going to say something kind of crazy here, too. I got to play right field once in Philadelphia in a game where Willie McGee was playing shortstop and Jose Okenda was pitching. Let's just say we were losing by a lot of runs. And the thing I remember most about that, first of all, that I didn't catch a couple fly balls in over my head. But secondly, it felt like a long way to run out to right field from the visitor's dugout. And no, it's not, but sure felt like it. I did it two different innings. And by the time I got in, it's like, man, they got to do this every day. And that's just, it's a little thing. I mean, it's, going from third base dugout to right field. But I'm telling you, the miles that you put in as a player, and, they're there 5 or 6 hours early every day. And, I think position players, frankly, get worn down more than pitchers do.
So the part that I was going to bring up, and I think both for pitchers and for position players, and you see it every day and you lived it, and a lot of us that are around the ballpark every day, or in my case in college, you see it too. But there's so the game itself is not even half of your day of the work that you're putting in. You're going to lift.
Yeah.
You're going to take 100 swings in the cages indoors before you take a swing outdoors. You're going to throw a bullpen or play long toss, or you're going to run when you're a pitcher. Like, there's so much more that happens when it comes to maintaining skills and strength, right? How many ground balls does Nolan Arenado take? That all wears you out, and that's a part of that equation that we just don't see unless you're there at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and they actually get there. I actually noticed this the other day. I had to get in early for some reason. There were guys there. Actually, it was a homestand, last homestand. There were guys there at 1:30 for a 7:00 game. So it is a long day. And, add all those things that you just said, Kevin. Add on top of that, watch a video of yourself striking out for about 10 minutes and saying, hey, I mean, talk about wearing you out. Now, that's not what it used to be. And again, we don't want to go back to the old days. I'm not that guy. But most of the time on the road, we would get to the ballpark at 5:00 for a 7:15 game. And that was plenty early enough to get ready to play. They can't do that now. There's just too many other things going on, including the lifting and the stretching and the treatment and all that stuff you're talking about.
And I'm interested, as a fellow broadcaster, what we do is very different from each other, but people will say, like, how do you fill 4 hours a day? And I say, well, I get home and I get a drink, not an alcoholic drink. I'm not a big drinker, but I'll make myself a soda. I'll sit down on the couch and I will literally start all over again at about 6 p.m. That's how you make 4 hours seem like it's easy when it's not. Well, and you guys have it even worse.
So we one of our favorite things to say is we have to plan our ad libs. So I mean, because you do some research, so you kind of know where the game might go, but it might go a different direction. So you have to be, so my son does improv comedy out in LA, and it's with all of his friends. He just does that for fun. He teaches it in LA. And we've talked about how what I do is improv. I mean, because you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You've got to think of something occasionally witty to say, or relevant at least, and build on it. And it's reality programming is what it is. So you prep, but then you have to react. You have to do both things. So you have to save enough energy for the game. And, you know, while we're talking about the broadcasters, and I'm sure I'm going to get all kinds of sympathy on this one, Dave, but since we're talking about it, you know, we do the game open air. I mean, so whatever, I mean, if it's 90, it's 90 for us, too. And, you know, there are great pictures in the past of Jack Buck with his feet in the ice bucket and Mike Shannon doing the same thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's a labor of love for all of us, of course, and it's a great job and everybody would love to have it. But, you know, you feel the effects of the weather somewhat even doing what we do.
How much does it wear on you, Rick, just when the team's not playing well?
Oh, my goodness. That's a very relevant question. You know, The last road trip was very tough in that regard, because you want, it's like watching your kids play. They're not my kids, but you're like, when you watch your kids play, there's so much angst, and everybody that's had a kid, or my younger brother was a player in the minor leagues with the Cardinals. When I would watch him play, I was a nervous wreck, and I kept thinking I'd rather play myself than watch somebody play, because that's painful. So I feel a little bit like that as a broadcaster, because I can't do anything about it. I can't help them. I can't fix it. I just have to kind of say what I see. And, you know, that's and I know fans feel the exact same way, because you just would love to hit the ball the other way to move the runner over and drive them in and all that stuff. And when it doesn't happen, it's very frustrating.
So, Rick, what are you seeing at the moment? Obviously, you know, everybody watching can see that a lot of things are going wrong, but you know, the starting pitching for a lot of the year has been a strength, but since July 1st, the veteran guys have about a 5.5 ERA, which is obviously going to be a problem if it doesn't get corrected. So maybe it will get corrected, right? The season goes in cycles the way that it goes. Are you seeing anything that stands out to you, or is it just a series of individual mistakes or things that are normal, but they're happening in a cluster right now?
Well, I think there was a cluster of mistakes from the starting staff in Cincinnati, because Sonny Gray struck out five of the first six batters that he faced, so his stuff was good, and right. He just made some mistakes and made too many of them. And Eric Fetty made a mistake or two, and Kyle Gibson made two or three, and Cincinnati was ready for them. So I mean, you can't make mistakes; you have to be kind of perfect. Unfortunately, the Cardinals have to be perfect because they've been playing so many close games. The margin for error is so razor thin. You make a mistake, and it just feels like a heavy burden for the whole team. One thing I think is going on with the team now is you expected Arenado and Goldie to carry the offense when spring training ended. They didn't. Who carried the offense when the Cardinals were good? Mason Wynn and Alec Burleson. And guess what? Last 2 weeks, they haven't done much. He's one of them.
Right.
Now, they're great. Love them. But the point is, even though they're young guys, I think they were kind of a spark to what was happening with the Cardinals, and others could kind of fill in. Now the spark's not coming from anywhere, frankly, and that's gonna change fast.
That is the hard part, right? I know that they're going to try playing some matchups, and Jordan Walker is back, and maybe he can end up working his way into some more regular time to help balance it out. Because there are a lot of guys, I mean, if you want to nail it down, I mean, there are a lot of guys struggling, right? I mean, Newt has been struggling now for 15, yeah, 16 games. And actually, you know, I the guys you mentioned, I know Burleson is not going well right now, but I've been really impressed with Wynn just kind of fighting, even when he's not right, of doing things that still help. But there are just so few guys that are playing at the level that you would expect.
Yeah, they can't carry the whole team. Others have to do it, too. And, you know, Jordan Walker, I mean, I feel like he's going to get his chance. I mean, I think, you know, the matchup, you know, right-hander, just, you know, Jordan made two flights just to make the first game of the series. So he was kind of worn out, I think, just even playing in that first game. And so I think not playing kind of in the second game was not a bad idea, just to get him kind of settled. But I think he's going to play more and more. And you know, who knows? I mean, there's a little bit of hope in the Jordan Walker conversation, because he wasn't hitting in AAA, really. I mean, a little bit, but not like you'd say, oh, he's going to project to being, you know, hitting a bunch of bombs in the big leagues. He might, but, you know, there's nothing that kind of indicates that that's a sure thing. But we're all hoping for that, aren't we? I mean, we're hoping that he hits the left-handed pitching and the Cardinals figure out a way to score more than just a couple of runs. You can't win with two or three runs in today's game, and you can't win if you don't hit home runs. That's kind of the way it is now. Yep. You have to do damage. The Cardinals aren't doing damage.
All right, buddy. Enjoy your day off, and we'll be here listening to you tomorrow.
You bet. Great to be with you guys, as always.
251 DGS. Coming up in about an hour, we have Senator Jim Talmadge joining us. Let's do some audio.
Okay, let's start with mine. This is Caitlin Collins on Stephen Colbert's show. I'm just going to let the audio speak for itself.
I know you guys are objective over there, that you just report the news as it is. Oh, I know. CNN makes a... I know.
Is that supposed to be a laugh line?
I wasn't supposed to be, but I guess it is.
How funny. I mean, especially Stephen Colbert's audience.
Very liberal.
Yeah, and I don't watch his show, but I saw a promo for it the other day, and they were like, it was just very, like, pro-Democrat. I mean, that's just the slant of the show. Just how funny that they have Caitlin Collins from CNN on, and that line gets a laugh.
Yeah. Well, we talk about it all the time. You and I are kind of CNN people, and yet we complain because they're so obviously in the tank.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm just watching the opinion shows or what, but it feels awfully biased. But, you know, anyway.
I mean, you have to pick your poison. You're going to get a bias. It's just which bias you're going to get. And I watch all of them. I don't watch Fox as much because I just can't stand the people on Fox. So it is a personality thing. I could take the policies. There's so many broadcasters over there who I just can't stand them. But I make myself, if I were not a broadcaster myself and I didn't need to watch all the different shows to get all the different opinions, I probably would never watch it. And then I'd be one of those people in a silo.
Yeah, and you know, it's less about policy on CNN, as far as the bias that I witness anyway, and it feels more like just like celebrating the wins of the left. And like anytime someone says something, it's like, well, let me actually jump in and correct you. And I'm going, is that really your place, your job as a journalist? They seem to think it is. I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. But just very funny that the audience laughed at that.
Yeah, I've not heard that.
I have another piece of audio, too. This is Kamala Harris and Tim Walz talking about when she tried to call him after she picked him as VP.
I was hoping maybe we wouldn't have to.
I called you, Tim.
Yes.
You didn't answer, Tim.
I know.
What happened?
The most important call of my life. It popped up, and we didn't recognize the caller ID, and it went to voicemail.
Hi, this is Jim. I'm not able to answer.
There you go.
It's possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Tim, it's Kamala. I really want to talk to you.
Just kind of funny to screen the phone call of the Vice President of the United States because you didn't notice, you didn't know their caller ID.
Well, you know, one kind of nice, charming thing about it, I've just figured that someone would call him and say, she's going to call you in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't do that.
Yeah.
It was more organic than that.
And I wonder if, you know, it's calling on a phone that they get when they're in the running to be the choice or if it's calling on their personal cell phone. It's very interesting.
You'd think it probably has to be his personal cell because, I mean, if they gave him a phone and it's like, this is the phone. You'd think he'd answer any of them.
Oh, that's a very good point.
So it almost had to be. So it's. I find that to be very relatable. You know what I mean? Like more and more now that everybody has your phone number in some way or another and you're constantly getting scam calls. It's funny to... It's funny to have the governor of a state screening calls like, I don't know.
The better story would be if he answered and she'd be like, this is Kamala Harris. He's like, yeah, sure it is. See ya.
Is
my refrigerator running?
As though...
What audio would you guys like to play? Wheels has a lot of audio.
What do I have? Man.
A lot of stuff, yeah. Maybe a shorty.
Yeah, let's see. Which ones do we have because I can't see the screen.
Just pick one far away.
Okay, here's some Trump ones. Vance Toaster.
Let's do the toaster one. This is quick, and it's not really it's not a partisan thing.
So let's talk a little bit about what we believe in the Republican Party. We believe that a million cheap knockoff toasters aren't worth the price of a single American manufacturing job. We believe in rebuilding American factories and rebuilding the American dream, and we're going to stamp more and more products with that beautiful label, Made in the USA.
That's good enough. To me, it's just this is the problem that is with politics, is stating that a million knockoff toasters, let's say they cost $5 less than another one. You think $5 million is the equivalent? Because Americans are the ones buying those toasters, right? That's what's happening, because they need to save the money. We need to acknowledge that end of the conversation and figure out how to bridge that gap and not just go with the sexy, fun talking points.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.